Morning, everyone. We're going to call the Government Operations Elections Policy Committee meeting to order. Representative Chad Anderson, can I have a motion on the minutes from April 19th?
Yes, I approve. I move to approve the minutes.
Representative Anderson moves the minutes from April 19th. Any discussion to those minutes? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Members, we're going to quickly do House File 3944, and I'm just going to do it from the chair. I will move House File 3944 to the Committee on Rules. Members, very simply, this is a bill that we heard a very short version of this bill in committee during the committee process. Traveled through the committee process. During that time, the bill was amended. We were working on the Radon Mitigation Licensing Act from last session. The bill you have in front of us today is just the rulemaking portion of that bill, since in the compromise amendment there was rulemaking provision. So we wanted to make sure we brought it before the committee. And all it does essentially is reshape the rules, the rulemaking authority that the department had last year in the Licensing Act to fit the compromise language that we now have in the bill. With that, members, I'll stand for any questions if there are any. Seeing none, I know that we have a few folks in the audience as well from the department. I don't know if you're interested in testifying or if there's any questions. Perfect. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered if we could get a little explanation on what work standards exactly mean. Presume that's part of the building construction or the inspection or just what?
We have a someone here from the department that will help us with the definition. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Hogan. I'm the Division Director for the Environmental Health Division at the Minnesota Department of Health. The work standards are really the requirements for installation of remediation systems in homes. So it sets the requirements for how that work is to be performed and the elements that need to be addressed when installing those remediation systems.
Representative Runbeck.
So fairly standardized, you know, set of procedures, or are we finding a lot of people that don't know, don't do it right, just what?
Well, we are finding situations where contractors are not installing those systems correctly. And the standards are really based off of national standards developed by a national organization, ARST, the American Radon Scientists and Technologists.
Okay. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any other member questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 3944 be referred to the Committee on Rules. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you all. Next up, members, we will have House File 3925. Welcome back to the committee, Chair Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Chair Hackbarth, I will make a motion that House File 3925 be referred to the Committee on Civil Law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an A1 amendment that I'd like to include before we start discussing the bill.
Representative Hackbarth moves the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. I will move that amendment for him. Any discussion to the A1 before we put the bill in the shape the author wishes? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A1 is adopted. Chair Hackbarth, to your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, House File 3925 has to do with the IRRB, the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board. This is legislation as a result of the legislative auditor doing a report, studying a report on the situation having to do with the IRRB, and the bill is here primarily because we want to give this some clarity, some transparency and accountability to what's happening with the money that's moving through the IRRRB. And that's why the bill is here, and it's much fashioned after the LCCMR to give the IRRRB some legislative oversight. So that's why the bill is here, and with me today, Mr. Chairman, I have House Research, Ms. Anita Newman, to go through the bill and give you a brief summary on what it contains.
Thank you, Chair Hagbarth. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm not going to go through every section and every subdivision in great detail, but we'll attempt to hit the significant points in the bill. So I'll turn your attention, sections 1 and 2 on page 1. There is the Minerals 21st Century Fund that is an account in deed. These two sections remove the statutory appropriation for the commissioner, so would subject spending from this fund to direct legislative appropriation. And section 2 is a conforming change dealing with match requirements, just removing reference to the board and replacing it with a reference to the commissioner and the agency. Section 3 is the language that defines what the commission is. The commission is established in section 6. It is a 9-member commission. 3 members would be appointed by the Senate, 3 members appointed by the House, and there would be 3 public members. One public member would be appointed by the Senate, one by the House, and one by the governor. In both of the legislative bodies, the language requires that there be at least one member of the minority party. That is among those appointments to this new legislative commission on Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation. Sections 4 and 5 on page 2 and 3 are conforming changes to this change that eliminates the current Iron Range Board effective July 1st of 2017. And so throughout Chapter 298, this bill attempts to replace the references to the board with references to this new commission. And it takes approval authority that the board currently has and vests that with the legislature. So the meat of the bill actually starts on page 5 in section 6. And this is where, if you direct your attention to beginning on line 29, it provides that beginning for fiscal year 2018, the commissioner of the Office of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation has to submit a budget or the spending proposals for that agency to this new legislative citizen commission for review and recommendation on those expenditures. On page 6, beginning on line 3, is the list of funds that would be subject to this new legislative appropriation process. And I won't go through all of those. You can read the list there. There are some carve-outs that begin on line 14, and these apply specifically to the Giants Ridge Enterprise account, which is the business account for Giants Ridge. This is the account that the commissioner has to pay out the contract obligations and expenses. And it also exempts any bond or contract obligations that the commissioner currently has with is existing contracts and school bonds, other sorts of guaranteed distributions. And it also, this is important to note, any of the formula-driven allocations related to the production tax, that this is the tax that the Commissioner of Revenue collects, and then in Chapter 298, there are formula-driven allocations to cities, towns, counties, school districts, the Taconite Homestead Credit. These would not be subject to this legislative approval process. Those distributions would continue to flow out under the existing formulas. I've already talked a little bit about who's on this new legislative commission. there is on page 7, I will point out on lines 16 and 17 of the citizen members, of the three citizen members, there is a requirement that they have to have a primary residence in the taconite assistance area. Mr. Chair and members, on page 8, there is also a citizen selection committee that's set up. Although the governor and the legislature will ultimately make the recommendations, the citizen recommendations, there is a citizen selection committee that will evaluate candidates and make forward a list of those names onto the legislature and the governor to pick their slate of candidates for the citizen members of the commission. When the commissioner submits his budget recommendations to this new legislative citizen commission, it will take 6 of the 9 members to approve those recommendations. Page 9 sets out some criteria that this commission has to consider when they're evaluating the budget. Much of this comes from the legislative auditor's recommendations on things that the Office of the Commissioner of Iron Range Resources should look at, and that includes whether a project can be completed without funding from the commissioner, job creation goals, what the long-term impact is on the climate on the Iron Range, and how it fits in with objectives, priorities, and goals that have been set forth. The commission is subject to the open meeting law. And then I'm going to move very quickly on page 10, 11, and 12. These are largely conforming changes that remove references to the board and make it very clear that spending actions have to be approved by the legislature. On page 12, subdivision 8, there is stricken language, and that is largely obsolete language that dates back to layoffs in 2000 and 2001 related to the LTV mining company. Page 13 in subdivision 3 are, again, some criteria that have to be used when making grants and loans. And again, this reflects the legislative auditor's recommendations with some augmentation. Subdivision 14 is a very clear statement of what legislative approval is, and that is a law that the legislature passes after January 1st of 17. Page 14, page 15, page 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Mr. Chair, pretty much up until page 31 are conforming changes, again, striking reference to the board and either substituting references to the commissioner or to the legislature. Page 31 at the bottom, page 32, 33, 34, 35, and 36 to the top. That is striking obsolete language relating to some cent per ton distributions that were made to municipalities under legislative direction, and those are old distributions, so that is that's just cleanup. The next piece, Mr. Chair and members, is on the very last page of the bill. Section 27 provides for initial appointments of the citizens members to the new legislative commission. Section 28 requires the Office of Management and Budget to conduct a study on the future of Giants Ridge, and that would include whether a sale of that property is appropriate. And Section 29 is an appropriation to the Legislative Coordinating Commission to hire an executive director and staff for the new legislative commission. And Section 30 is just a revisor instruction to fix anything that we forgot in this draft.
Thank you, Ms. Newman, very much. Members, any questions for Ms. Newman as she walked through the bill? Representative Albright.
Ms. Newman, on page 7, actually starting on page 5, just have a series of questions with regard to definitions. Lines 5.30 and 5.31, it says all expenditures by the commissioner must be approved by the legislature in the manner provided. So is it the commissioner's authority to approve or deny the budget, or just to make recommendations?
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, the commissioner would have to submit the budget for the office, all the spending for the budget, to the new commission. And the commission would review that and then make recommendations for legislative action on that. So the commissioner would have to get appropriations like other agencies do in order to do the spending out of the named funds.
So Ms. Newman, thank you, Mr. Chair. So just in the same way that the other commissioners would come before either state government operations or state gov finance to have their budget approved, that would be the protocol for this new commission.
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and members, the commissioner, I would ultimately think, would come and make a presentation to the committees. It would be this new commission that would actually make recommendations to the legislature for legislative appropriation, but there is nothing in this that would prohibit the commissioner from going to the governor or going or having bills on the side that would come to the legislature, but it would require legislative approval for any spending.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Newman, on the top of page 7 describes the membership of the commission itself, and you cite three members of the Senate, three members of the House. I would imagine there's an inference in terms of the people that would be most likely identified with being on that from either the Senate or the House, but is there a mandate that those members need to reside within the Iron Range?
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, the mandate for having a primary residence, or the criteria that a citizen member would have to meet, that is the only thing that there is a specific requirement on, is that the citizen members have to have a primary residence in the taconite assistance area.
Representative Albright.
But that would not pertain to the legislative appointees.
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, that is correct. This language doesn't have that.
Thank you. Ms. Newman, on page 8, on line 8.11, could you give a better detail in terms of how exactly different regions of the state are determined?
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, this language is modeled on how the LCCMR functions, so there is not any kind of definition of what different regions are, so I would defer to Representative Hackbarth or those who have more experience with how the LCCMR functions to answer that.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Hackbarth, or Representative Hackbarth, is any comment from you on that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hackbarth, on the line it just says different regions of the state. And so I'm just wondering if the language or the interpretation of that language in terms of clarity, how would you determine who would be available to serve on the Citizen Selection Committee? Would they necessarily need to be from the northeast corner of the state, or might they also be from the southwest corner of the state?
Chair Hackbarth.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Albright, maybe we have to tweak this a little bit. This was just kind of boilerplate language from the LCCMR that we put in here, and maybe we have to clarify that a little bit. The intent is that we want to get people from the Iron Range to serve as citizen members on the commission, and that's the ultimate goal.
Representative Albright.
I'll continue to peruse, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, on the last page on line 39.1, the figure of $420,000, I don't know, Ms. Newman, if you have the answer to how that figure was arrived at, or if that's more of a question I can ask Representative Hackbarth. Mr.
Ms.
Chair,
Newman.
Representative Scott.
You don't know.
That's not my answer. Right.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scott, I think this was just a figure that we arbitrarily came to. We thought maybe that might be the appropriate amount. We based it on some other wages and things like that.
Okay, thank you.
And members, this will be going to jobs as well, so that's where we'll have the actual numbers discussion. We're happy to talk about any sort of policy in the bill outside of the actual numbers. We don't do that here. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, the funding for the IRRRB, can you describe how the fund is funded?
Chair Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This commission is going to be funded through the IRRR, the funds that come to the IRRRB. That's how we're going to fund the commission. And it comes from a production tax, and I can't remember what the name of the other tax. Occupation tax, right. And that's where the money comes from, and it goes directly to the IRRB.
Representative Halverson.
And Mr. Chair, do the production taxes and the taxes you described, are they drawn from areas around the state, or are they drawn specifically from businesses in the Iron Range region?
Chair
Hackbarth.
Mr. Chairman, they're derived from the taconite companies and companies on the Iron Range for the occupation tax. And there's also, I believe, currently about $8.7 million that come from the general fund.
Representative Halverson.
Mr. Chair, and to the author, you mentioned that there's an intent to have the Iron Range represented by the Citizen Council. Is there any intent with regard to who the legislative members and other members are with regard to the makeup of the council?
Mr. Chairman, it'd be difficult to say because it depends on who's going to be in the majority at the time, so we can't really state how that's going to work with the legislature.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, perhaps since the majority of the funds are being drawn from businesses within the region, that it might serve us well to have some legislative intent to ensure that the elected officials from the Iron Range have a voice in this, since they're representing those businesses whose taxes are being spent, and I don't know of another situation in the state. I mean, the LCCMR derives its funds from around the state. This is very, very specific, and so I don't know that as a representative from the suburbs that I have the best ideas of how to encourage economic development in the Iron Range region, and so some legislative intent about who is representing the range up there might make a lot of sense in this regard.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have just a quick question maybe on, and I'm sorry if I missed this in the beginning, on the pathway of this bill, because I know it's past deadlines. There is also a section on 9.33 to 10.6 that deals with Chapter 13, because it is a new commission being set up, but would, you know, normally have to go through civil law as well. So I was just kind of asking what you thought the pathway of this.
Yeah, the motion is to civil law, and from there it will probably, I don't know if it will have other committees, but the finance committee of this will be jobs. So for sure civil law, which is the motion on this bill right now from this committee, and then it will eventually be in jobs. I'm not sure if there are other committees at this point that it will end up in as well. Chair Hackbarth can maybe add to that.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's going to have to go out rules at some point so we can take care of that issue.
Thank you, Ms. Newman. I think that's all the questions we have for you now, if you don't mind hanging around just a little bit. Guys, we're going to have Auditor Nobles come up, and then we'll get to you guys as well.
The bill affects Iron Range legislators.
Representative Anzels, we'll get to you.
I think it's appropriate for us to speak now.
Representative Anzels, we'll get to you after the auditor, okay? Auditor Nobles, you can come on up to the table, and Ms. Hauer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Nobles. With me is Elizabeth Stowicki, Director of Legal Research at the Office of Legislative Auditor, and Jody Hauer, who was the manager of our evaluation. I'll just say a few brief words, Mr. Chairman. We issued this report at the request of the legislature and with the approval of in topic selection of the Legislative Audit Commission, which is, as I think you all recall, a bipartisan commission of the legislature. And it had various components. Ms. Hauer was involved in the evaluation, essentially, of the performance of the organization. Mr. Wicke and I looked at the constitutional question, which is discussed in the appendix of the report. And the constitutional question is really what I think gives rise to the legislation that you have before you. There may be other issues as well in our report, certainly about the performance of the IRRRB. But what we found in the constitutional analysis is that this is a very unique organization. It is an executive agency, and I think that's very important to keep in mind, and specifically to Representative Halverson's question about expertise. The expertise really for deciding what projects will do well on the Iron Range, loans, grants. There is a staff of people at the IRRRB who do that kind of analysis and consideration every day. That's their job, to define companies that will help strengthen and diversify the Iron Range. So I think the most important thing to keep in mind is that this is an executive agency. An appointee of the governor acts as commissioner. In fact, the current commissioner is a former commissioner of the Department of Economic Development for the state of Minnesota. What makes this organization unique is that there is this board of legislators, and it is set up by law, and they have significant authority and control over the agency and its budget. And we found that that raised a question about the constitutionality and whether or not it would be vulnerable to a constitutional challenge, because legislators having authority to control an executive agency raises an issue about separation of powers. It also raises an issue about whether or not that position on that board constitutes another office. And there are attorneys' general opinions, there's the language of the statutes, which led us to conclude that the current governance structure is vulnerable to a constitutional challenge on both separation of powers and what is typically referred to as the prohibition against dual office holding by a legislator. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, we'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Noble. Members, any question for the auditor? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Nobles. You raised the question of the constitutionality of that. Is that the legislature's position to judge that, or is that something the courts would have to judge? I know a lot of times we pass laws and they get challenged, and my understanding, this hasn't been challenged in court by anybody in the past, but is it the courts that decide the constitutionality of that, or is it the legislature that has to do that?
Mr. Noble.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, if you have our report to the appendix, the constitutional issue, we say exactly what you just said. We said we understand that the courts decide constitutional questions, but we were asked by legislators to examine whether or not, based on the language of the statute, case law, opinions from attorneys general, whether or not this structure would be vulnerable to a constitutional challenge. So yes, ultimately it would be up to courts to decide. So that is what we said, and we agree. But I think sometimes legislators in establishing organizational structures do like to be advised as to whether or not that organizational structure might be vulnerable to a constitutional challenge. And that's what we concluded.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so this has been in effect 20 years, and no one has come forward and challenged it. Like I said, and we've passed many laws that we think may be constitutional. In some cases, we pass laws knowing full well they won't be. But we do it anyway. But I think it's up to the courts to decide, someone to challenge us in courts as to whether it's constitutional or not. So, and that's where my question is for now.
Follow up, Mr. Nobles, or
no, Mr. Chair. I agree. It would be up to a court. Although I would point out that we all take an oath, you as well, to uphold the Constitution.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Members, any other questions for Mr. Nobles or the Auditor's Office?
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, and Mr. Nobles. So, defining the IRRB as an executive branch agency, what is it in its makeup that makes it an agency? Because that seems like where the difficulty is, or the perceived conflict of interest arises.
Mr. Nobles, members, it's an executive agency because the statute puts it there, and the governor appoints the head of that agency, just like the governor appoints the head of every other executive agency. The employees at IRRB are employees of the executive branch. That's the way it was originally constructed. In fact, the commissioner sits on the governor's cabinet. So it is very definitely, without question, an executive agency.
Representative Runbeck.
So, Mr. Chair, if it was had been given a slightly different structure or slightly different rank in the governor, you know, I guess, in the executive branch. Well, no. Okay, so I guess I'm understanding. So now you're proposing that it be a legislative deciding entity, essentially.
Mr. Chairman, not exactly, members of the committee. I think we need to clarify that. There will still be an executive agency called the IRRB, although you might want to rename it, in part because I think there's always been a lot of confusion about the distinction between the executive agency and the Board of Legislators. The organization does, in fact, go by the name IRRB, by the name of the board, although there is an executive agency, and I think at a point in time, it did change its name simply to the Iron Range Resources agency or office. But no, there will still be in this bill an executive agency with a commissioner appointed by the governor. The commission that is being established would simply be advisory, similar to the LCCMR, the Lessard-Sams, and other commissions in the legislature that give input and advice to the legislature as to the budget and the appropriations. So it puts it more, I would say, in line with the way other appropriations are made.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any other member questions for the auditor? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. If you guys wouldn't mind hanging out in the wings, I'm sure we might have additional questions. With that, now Representative Anzels, Metz, and Eklund, you guys can make your way to the table. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Government Operations Committee. If you would just introduce yourselves for the record, and however you guys want to proceed with testimony is fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be with you here this morning. For the record, I'm Tom Anzels, and to my right,
Representative Eklund, I represent 3A.
Representative Jason Metza.
Ordinarily, we would be joined here this morning with the fourth member of our delegation who represent the Taconite Assistance Area, Representative Carly Moline, but as you know, she's on maternity leave, but she extends her best wishes. Members, the four of us are members of the IRRR board. We are members of the board by virtue of the fact that our legislative districts comprise a majority or all of the counties in the Taconite Assistance Area, and that is by statute. So currently on the IRRR board are the four of us, three senators, Senator Bach, Senator Saxog, and Senator Tomasoni. And then current law allows for the Senate to choose a ninth member, which is Senator Skoy. And our group in the House also includes Representative Lewick, who is our fifth House member, who represents the Cuyuna portion of the Taconite Assistance Area. Members, we're here this morning and we're contemplating a piece of legislation that was given birth by the legislative audit report, which I would make the point was a program evaluation about compliance, about monitoring, about due diligence, and about the process by which grants and loans by the staff and the board at Iron Range Resources are made. The legislative auditor's report did not speak to the quality of loans or how loans were put together or the wisdom of loans. Merely the legislative audit report was about compliance and monitoring. There are three basic flaws in the bill before you. The first of which is virtually 99% of the money that is spent by the staff, available to be spent by the staff and the commissioner and the board at Iron Range Resources, is local property tax money. Local property tax money generated by a production tax. The production tax is the tax that the mining companies pay. They pay $2.60 a long ton. One could argue that in effect they are getting 200 pounds of ore per ton for free. But that's a discussion for another day. It was in 1984 that the Minnesota Supreme Court ruled that the production tax was, in fact, a property tax. And members, for us, that means local units of government in Cook, Lake, St. Louis, Itasca, Aiken, and Crow Wing do not receive the normal and customary commercial industrial property tax from this business that is doing business of extracting minerals on the Mesabi. That is a very important point here. The mission of the IRRRB is the economic diversification of an area that has been dependent upon natural resources. That is the goal, that is the mission, and that is the job of the commissioner and the staff and the board. The second flaw in the legislation before you is that this is very unfriendly to entrepreneurs, unfriendly to businesses who are interested in retaining jobs in the six county Taconite assistance area, and more importantly, really unfriendly to those entrepreneurs and businesses with ideas for expansion who come to the range, who talk to the staff, who try to work out loans and grants to expand their businesses to the Taconite assistance area. Imagine if you were an entrepreneur looking to expand your business, working out all of the due diligence with the professional staff that the commissioner employs at the agency, only to find out that the 201 esteemed members of the Minnesota legislature would have to approve or disapprove or amend any business diversification effort in the taconite assistance area. I think on its face, that is a very, very serious problem. The third flaw is that this will actually be costly, more costly than what is envisioned today. You heard the author essentially say that the $420,000 figure for an executive director for the Legislative Citizen Commission was just simply a number that somebody thought about or somebody thought of, rather than any due diligence or any real development of a business plan. So before I turn it over to my colleagues, I want to underscore the major point, which is these are property taxes. These are property taxes that belong to the people in the six counties of the Taconite Assistance Area. These are property taxes that are spent on public works and infrastructure for townships and schools and municipalities and counties. And these are property taxes that are spent to diversify the Iron Range economy beyond the three strengths we have: timber, taconite, and tourism. So I'll turn it over to my colleague, Representative Metza, who in whose district 60% or 60 cents out of every dollar from the production tax comes from. It's his district where the mines are currently located. So Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. It is true, 60% of the taconite production tax does come from my district and is shared throughout the region. And this was done for a very good reason years ago. With the ebbs and flows in the mining industry, we thought it prudent that we put together a structure that stabilized the local economy. There used to be an ad valorem tax, which would make one of my communities, when the mining times are good, some of the wealthiest communities in the state. However, we didn't want to be short-sighted and go through the ups and downs, so we thought we really need to partner as a group of communities in a region to work together to provide opportunity throughout the area to stabilize the local economy. Some successes, some failures throughout the years and what we've done, but overall, again, 60 cents out of every dollar comes in to these other communities from my district. And I think it's also important, to mention, I feel like, the author of the bill has significantly, judging from other legislation that went through our mining committee, we have a bill providing much-needed relief to the Mille Lacs area. And in that bill, when it went through committee in the mining committee, there was zero oversight from the state in the money that we were giving out to those communities. That was since changed, and I think, for the better. Much like we can do at the agency, we had a legislative audit report that pointed out some of our flaws, and the good work that we do here in all these committees essentially allows us that opportunity. As that bill went through the process, it got much better. And when it left jobs, it had adequate oversight and was something that I think every one of us here could sign off on in a responsible way to allow that community the relief it needs while allowing the spending to remain local. And we feel in this case that this bill, when a budget has to come before the legislature for approval, would essentially handcuff all of our communities with any projects. And as we all know, in the fast-moving business pace that our commerce and country has kind of become a lot quicker moving in terms of people making decisions, looking at opportunities, and we feel that the extra hurdle of having the legislature have to approve a budget for local property tax dollars, which to my knowledge is not done anywhere else. It's not done in Hennepin County, in Anoka County. These dollars are up to local elected officials to spend. In this case, we've been appointed to the board. There are a few things that need correction. There are three accounts out of all the accounts in the agency that did not have the that were in question, I should say, for the constitutionality. And I believe there is an amendment here today to address that, the A3 amendment, or I don't know which number here are we going, the DE1. And that's essentially, you know, something that we really need to think about here today. We, as you know, have had a rough couple years. We're in the worst economic downturn that we've seen in generations. The production tax is based on a three-year average. And so when times were good a few years ago, the money distributed to our local communities was a little higher, a little more room in the budgets. And right now we're getting ready to go through a downturn with production kind of taking a nosedive over the last year. So our communities are already going to see a significant decrease in what many of you would call LGA and or the county aid. And what we really need to, I think, focus on is addressing the concerns of the auditor and fixing those constitutional questions. But what we know that the agency was already working on before the report even came out was some of the grant oversight and making sure that those grants and loans had adequate review processes after they were given so that we could determine whether the communities were meeting the goals outlined when they received the grant that were required to receive the funding and or loan. And so overall, you know, I really see this bill as more of a political jab. It's come now at the end of session. We've actually got legislation we've been working on to address some of this, and I think this goes far beyond what the legislative auditor recommended in terms of that, and I just respectfully ask you to consider that. We have no problem addressing the changes that need to be made. In fact, we've been championing that since the report came out, and even before the report came out, saying we hope to learn how we can make this state agency better. And I hope that you'll work with us to do just that, but not making it too cumbersome on our communities and making us a future political football by having everything that they want to do come through the legislature, which no one else in the state has to do, except for the example outlined here in this bill.
Mr. Chair, in your earlier discussion, there was reference made to the state's general fund and to the occupation tax. A couple of clarifying points. The occupation tax is tantamount to a state income tax paid by iron ore mining companies, and the occupation tax, it goes into the state's general fund. Secondly, reference was made to the state's general fund share of assistance to the six counties in the Taconite assistance area. That state general fund money goes in place of commercial industrial property tax relief for a portion of the six counties in the Taconite assistance area. Our newest member on our board is Representative Eklund. He's a former county commissioner, and he'd like to make a statement.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I've been on the IRRB board for 4 months. I took my predecessor's place after I won the special election. After a report from the OLA, Mark Phillips, the IRRB commissioner, testified that the agency was working to implement all recommendations. This bill is concerning because it's taking our property tax taxes within the taconite assistance area and subjecting them to legislative review. It would be like subjecting the county taxes for Anoka or Ramsey counties to legislative approval. There are certainly things that can be addressed, but in the taconite assistance area, the $2.60 per long ton was needed because the mining companies could not be trusted to pay what their actual property taxes were. We currently pay from the taconite assistance area $28 per student statewide, and larger amounts to several of the metropolitan area school districts. There is currently no other area in the state that generates school trust funds, except in the northern third of the state, which is a large part of the taconite assistance area, because most of the other school trust lands have been sold off for a one-time payment. No other region in the state is facing this type of scrutiny or legislative oversight. We will fix the areas addressed in the OLA report, but this bill, in my opinion, is not the way to address it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, we have several members on the list for questions to these testifiers. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So hearing that, I mean, yes, you're a very unique agency and kind of a hybrid and so on. So property taxes, if that's what you want to call the production tax, I mean, isn't this board somewhat usurping what county officials do and what city officials normally do in terms of economic development? It just seems that there would be a lot of support from local officials to restructure it and to do it differently.
Mr. Representative Anzels.
Representative Runbeck, thank you for the question. First of all, I want to reiterate, the Minnesota Supreme Court in 1984, in a case brought by Erie Mining Company, the Supreme Court ruled that the production tax is a property tax. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court understood that it was impossible to successfully and properly decide on the valuation of iron ore in the ground that has been yet to have been mined. Thus, the conversion to a property to a production tax. Now, the question about local officials versus the board of legislators making funding decisions. It was thought accurately, in my view, some 75 years ago, that if economic diversification were to be the goal, and it is the goal, it continues to be the goal, economic development, business development, to commission town boards and 48 mayors and school boards and other local officials, each with a portion of the economic development mission, just was not appropriate. It was felt then and it's felt now that a regional approach to economic development is best. And so the board is the regionalized economic development entity that works tirelessly to make economic development happen. Representative Mehta?
Yeah, and I would just add that a lot of the spending that is done through the agency is done in formulas, which we vote on here at the legislature. And those formulas go out very similarly to what you're describing, which is, you know, local city funding, local school funding, very similar to how a county operates. However, the work that Representative Anzels just referred to is mainly out of the DJJ trust account when we're trying to attract larger businesses to move, or any business really for that matter, to move to the area to diversify our economy. And so that would be one facet of something that might be a little outside what counties do, but in my experience in the 3 years in the legislature, we've done a significant amount of work with the county also, whether it's Itasca, St. Louis, Aiken, Laker, Cook. We always usually find some matching funds for investment in drawing those dollars as well. And so I think to say that all the money coming through, when you look at the number, it can be significant that you're looking at $102 million a few years ago is what the agency had flow through it. However, a majority of those funds went out directly into formulas to our communities. And we do a few public works grants that are typically done with economic development in mind. This year in particular, we did some that we looked at as if we can get these projects or some of the seed money out to the communities, and they're typically around a $250,000 grant, maybe up to $400,000, but very typical around $250,000 to do things like running sewer for a expansion on a manufacturing site. So a majority of that work is still similar to what a county would do in partnership. However, we do it at a advisory board level for a majority of that. And again, there's only three accounts that aren't advisory in the whole agency. And so we are committed to fixing those and making sure that we are advisory on those. I think that we have acted as advisory in those positions, which is probably why there's not been a challenge over the years. Because I wrote one of the bills in my first term that doesn't have the governor's sign-off. And in the entire process here at the legislature, it was a significant bill creating a school trust account up there for the embetterment of kids on the Iron Range and getting money out to our schools. And no one brought it up that it was missing that component. And so when I learned of it, I owned up to it right away. I was on Almanac North shortly after the legislative auditor report came out saying, that was my fault. I should have caught that. Now that I know about it, I'm going to make sure that if there's any other account that we're either reworking or working on down here at the Capitol, that that's one of the first questions I ask. And I think that's you know, one of the great values of having the legislative auditor here is to catch things that need to get caught and make them work. But overall, we function very similarly to a county.
Staff and commissioner make recommendations to the board. Board acts, and all but three of those accounts require the governor's approval. And the three accounts that currently do not require the governor's approval, we are moving to correct and get us into a situation where all decisions require gubernatorial approval.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. One, Representative Anzels, when you were talking about your concerns with the bill, the first thing you had talked about was property taxes, and you had said something that kind of caught my attention. I just want to make sure that I've got clarification. So if you've got your notes, you might want to go back to that first point. You had talked about in the on the Iron Range in the affected counties, they don't pay commercial property tax that can be used by the counties. I was looking for some clarification on that statement as to what property tax that would be a commercial tax. I'll tell you what I'm thinking is the state of Minnesota has the commercial and industrial tax that all commercial businesses pay. I'm just wondering if I'm drawing a conclusion that the range businesses and counties don't have to pay that tax to the general fund, or do I misunderstand? That's why I'm giving you a chance to clarify for me as to what you were after on that one.
Mr. Representative Chair, Anzels. Representative O'Driscoll, my good friend.
You know what that means.
1965 Taconite Amendment. Taconite mining companies do not pay commercial industrial property taxes of any kind. Every other business does. Point I was trying to make, and I didn't do it very artfully, obviously, the mining companies do not pay property taxes proportionately to the four local units of government the way every other business venture in the state pays. They pay a production tax, a measly $2.60 a ton. And a long ton at that. Peanuts.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I want to maybe ask Mr. Nobles to come up and provide some clarification on the next question that I have, if that's possible.
Sure. Mr. Nobles, you can come on back to the table as well. Maybe one of the pages can now bring an additional chair up to the testifier table, please. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nobles, there's been some discussion today about the production tax being ruled by the Supreme Court as a form of property tax. Are you familiar, or could you provide some clarification on the history of that, or if there's other court cases? I'm familiar with one that has brought to my attention called Carlson v. Johnson that dealt with that particular issue. And just again, for the committee's benefit, we might want to hear some clarifying language on the Supreme Court's decision as well.
Mr. Nobles.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Driscoll, I am going to ask Ms. Dewicki to address that. She's our attorney and director of our legal research.
Welcome to the committee. If you would just introduce yourself for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Elizabeth Dewicki, and I'm director of legal research for the OLA. One of the things we were going based on a later case by the Minnesota Supreme Court that you referenced, and that was Johnson v. Carlson, and that was in 1993. And the issue there was whether Governor Arne Carlson had the ability to veto a 1991 law that assigned revenue from a taconite tax to a new higher education program on the Iron Range. They found that he did have that authority, that it was a valid exercise. And the reason that we bring this up is because as part of the discussion in this, the court addressed the issue on whether the taconite tax is a local tax. And if you don't mind, let me just read a little bit verbatim on this. The court said the argument is that the taconite tax is unique, in effect, a local tax intended for local purposes, constitutionally established in lieu of other forms of taxation to be used within the taconite tax relief area. And the court said the fact remains, however, that the taconite tax is a state-imposed tax, not a local tax, controlled in part by the Resources Board, which itself is a state agency. The monies raised by the tax, while they may not go into the general fund, are public revenues of the state, so that expenditure of these revenues is subject to the appropriation process and consequently the line item veto. So that was the case that we were going at as one of as part of the basis for our position that it was vulnerable to a constitutional challenge.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I guess I don't have anything further to add, but I'll just ask maybe in a summation. My understanding is that it's not a local levied property tax or akin to that. It's a tax imposed or created by the legislature and has also been litigated and found to be constitutional, even though it didn't go to the Supreme Court. Am I summarizing that correctly?
Mr. Stuckey, Mr. Nobles?
Mr. Chair, I mean, all of this that we're talking about is established in state law. The tax, the distribution, the formulas, all of this is in state law. So it is governed by you, the legislature, enacting state law. You can designate that tax revenue and have for the purposes that are outlined here by Representative Anzels and others, but that still falls under your jurisdiction. So I think also, and just as long as I'm here, I'll just say, I mean, the real question here, and it's come up in a variety of ways, for us on the issue that we raised on the constitutionality, is what role, what authority, what power is appropriate under the Minnesota Constitution for legislators to exercise over an executive agency. And I would point out, because I think it hasn't been mentioned yet, that that power, authority, and control was changed in 1995 by an amendment. Prior to 1995, clearly state law gave the board advisory authority. They made recommendations, but that was changed in 1995 by an amendment to the statute that required the commissioner's budget to be, in all projects proposed by the commissioner, to be approved by the board. And that was really the kind of demarcation, the line that we felt that was crossed, that created the vulnerability to a constitutional challenge, giving a group of legislators control, authority, power over an executive agency's budget.
Representative?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anzels.
One has to go back to the original 1965 Taconite Amendment, which, by the way, was proposed and promoted vigorously by the very companies that are involved here, the mining companies, U.S. Steel, Pickens Mather, M.A. Hanna, Cleveland Cliffs, and so on and so forth. And what the mining companies said was, in order for them to put in the capital and the hundreds of millions of dollars to begin Minnesota's taconite industry, they needed fair taxation. They needed a level playing field. They're always talking about fair taxation and a level playing field. Well, the citizens of Minnesota in 1965 gave that to them. And it is still in existence for today. And to the best of my knowledge, it is supported by the mining industry. They supported the amendment in 65, and the process that we have in place today, I assume, they are supportive of as well.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anzels, in your comments, you mentioned that 99% of the money spent by the IRRR is intended for local property tax. So if there's 1% left, is that the money that, and I want you to clarify this for me, that is dedicated towards economic diversification?
Representative Anzels.
Mr. Chair and Representative, no. The 99% figure was meant to get across the fact that what we're talking about is almost exclusively money from the taconite production tax. The occupation tax is shared with the entire state. And the state shares with a portion of the taconite assistance area about $8 million from the general fund for commercial industrial property tax relief. My use of the figure 99% was inaccurate. Lastly, you asked, I think, what portion of it all is for economic development. The answer is, case can be made to answer that question by saying all of it. Public works that supports a business expansion or retention, that's economic development. Our mission for the staff and the commissioner and the board is economic diversification. So all of the, virtually all of these production tax dollars are directed toward the developing the economic base of the region away from the three T's.
Representative Anzels.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what would be the value of loans awarded last year in aggregate, over the course of the last 5 years towards, and I'll more narrowly refine my previous question in terms of monies granted or loaned to entities that would diversify away from the three T's?
Representative Anzels, and we're starting to talk a lot about money, and that makes me nervous. Representative Anzels.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, pretty obvious I don't have that number on the tip of my tongue. What I can tell you is that the agency has had some successes, and the agency has had some failures. Economic development is difficult. Economic development is about due diligence, but ultimately taking risks. And there have been some successes and some failures, but I can't give you any quantifiable figure.
Mr. Chair, let me rephrase that last question, and I appreciate, you know, this is a rulemaking body, so I'll deviate course a little bit here. The IRRR, when they're taking a look at an application for a grant or a loan, and I understand that the makeup of the IRRR is principally from the Iron Range, and I'm not going to disparage that. Could you walk me through the due diligence process that is undertaken for a grant or a loan?
Thank you for Chair, thank you for the question. And I just happen to have an expert witness, the Commissioner of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation, Mr. Mark Phillips.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Phillips. If you would, Commissioner, please introduce yourself for the record.
Mark Phillips, I'm the Commissioner of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. Mr. Chairman, Representative Albright, we have professional staff, and we do normal credit due diligence that any lender would do. Usually our risk profile, we're hoping, is somewhat higher. One of the points that the legislative auditor made is that we shouldn't be doing deals that could be done conventionally only. So we probably have a little higher risk profile than a conventional lender does, but we do credit evaluation and business plan due diligence like any other lender or economic development entity would.
So, Commissioner, I guess, what are you doing? What have you changed since this report came out? Because if I read the auditor's report, and this goes back to a little bit to what Representative Anzel said in the beginning, where they didn't make a judgment on the quality of loans, and you're correct. But what they did say very clearly is that overall the IRRB oversight and evaluation of its loan, the database the IRRB uses to maintain the information on loans, is inaccurate and outdated. And there's many files that were reviewed that have little to vague job estimates or approval of or recognition of objectives that have been met. So I'm curious, if you're saying you do what every other lender does, the auditors disagreed. So there must have been a change in the last 3 weeks or so. Maybe you could walk us through that.
Mr. Chairman, sure, I'd be happy to. The one of the points, you know, we do we structure our economic development loans in many different ways. Very often we are a participant with a private lender, a bank per se. And very often they are unwilling to put job requirements in their loan documents, and we buy a participation from the bank loan. So we independently survey our customers and ask them their job creation, what they've done every year, we survey. The legislative auditor indicated that they didn't think a survey, we didn't go in then and examine payroll records, for example. So they made some suggestions that we've embraced, that we might use state unemployment data, like take a, I call it a meter reading on the company before the loan, and then take one every 6 months or annually or whatever. So we are embracing the legislative auditor's report, but it's a monitoring thing. They did not say, and if I think if Ms. Hauer wanted to come up and clarify that, that we did not ever ask for job information or anything like that. They found occasional lapses, but it was usually around a loan that was not a conventional direct loan. And whenever we had a forgiveness component of our loan, we very accurately got job information, and that was pointed out in the report if you read it. The other thing I would point out is that this is all about monitoring compliance and the way we count jobs and things. It wasn't a reflection on our ability to loan the money. And I think that's, you know, the oversight's all about how we're spending the money. The audit report wasn't. So I have a hard time juggling this bill with what the audit report. We've embraced every recommendation they've made. They made six recommendations, and I think two or three of them were already have taken care of, and we're working on the other three right now.
So Commissioner, then, so you agree that the oversight and evaluation of your loans and grants were inadequate at the time of the report?
Mr. Chairman, that's a loaded question. I believe
that,
no,
Commissioner, it's a key fact and a key finding from the OLA. So what I'm asking, you just said you embrace the recommendations. So in order to embrace the recommendations, I'm assuming then that you agree to the underlying assessment of why you need to embrace those recommendations. And
Mr. Chairman, I will agree that we, as a believer in continuous improvement, that we welcomed the legislative auditor. We were cooperative. We got had a famous relationship, I think a very good relationship. I'm sure he'd be happy to come up here and testify to that. And every agency I've worked, I was at DEED. We had continuous improvements effort, a better government for a better Minnesota. Absolutely.
Well, Commissioner, I don't doubt any of that. What we're trying to ascertain here, and Representative Anzels talked about how unfriendly the bill is, but at the same time, if we can't agree on the underlying issues or problems, then we are going to have a hard time finding a solution. So again, Commissioner, with all due respect, key facts and findings from the OLA report say that the oversight and evaluation of your loans and grants are inadequate, that your database and the information on your loans is currently inaccurate and outdated, and you have little evidence of achieving objectives.
Mr. Chairman, if you listen to the testimony that Ms. Hauer provided to the joint nonpartisan legislative audit commission, that she indicated that there were occasional lapses, certain loan files, it isn't a blanket thing. And this bill actually doesn't address any of the six recommendations. This bill is about legislative oversight. This bill is about, I think, this constitutional issue that wasn't part of our legislative audit. That was an appendix. The six audit points are about monitoring, compliance, and things like that, and we are addressing them.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Phillips, mm-hmm. You mentioned that you participate in some of the loans that are awarded by the IRRR. Kind of a two-pronged question on that in terms of what would determine in your mind or the board's mind in terms of an adequate participation in one of those loans, and if you go through a process, and is that decision also made and as a recommendation to the executive branch, or is that made by the board itself?
Representative Anzels.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Albright, I will cite an example in answering your question. During the Pawlenty administration, a project developed by entrepreneurs to create a coal gasification facility in the Taconite Assistance Area was proposed by Commissioner Lehman to the board and to Governor Pawlenty on two occasions. The first was for $1.5 million in 2003, and the second request, which was approved by the board and the Pawlenty administration in 2006, was for $8 million for a total of $9.5 million to build a coal gasification plant, and the entrepreneurs put up $60,000 of their own capital. That is a dramatic example of what does not happen anymore at the agency.
Mr. Anz, Representative Anzler, Mr.
Representative Barbara, go back to the commissioner.
How many recommendations of the board to governors over the past 20 years have been revoked, or the governor has dissented on the approval or the recommendation made by the board?
Mr. Chairman,
Commissioner,
I don't know that. I've been in the office about a year. In fact, the legislative audit is a look back. I mean, I don't want to be defensive about that, but that look back over Commissioner Lehman's and Commissioner Sertich's period of time, this whole audit was. This wasn't during my term there. But I would say this, that you brought up an interesting question before. By statute, we have a technical advisory committee before any of our financings are brought to the board for approval. And this is a citizens group made up of bankers and attorneys and business people locally that the commissioner appoints. And they have staggered terms and everything. And all our loan financings go before this technical advisory committee and then are recommended up before they go before the board. So we have quite a bit of citizen participation in the process by statute already.
Well, final follow-up, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Phillips, I think, you know, notwithstanding the changes that you have cited in terms of structurally changing the way that approval of loans and mechanisms in place, I think there is a function of a fiduciary responsibility that is incumbent upon the board, but I think it also extends to the executive branch as well. And so when you look at the McCutcheon test, I'm still in a quandary as to if any sitting governor has been complicit in the recommendations by the IRRR board in terms of how they want to move forward on a project. It would seem to me that if there hasn't been a substantial and substantive dissent based upon written matter or an argument against a project that was recommended to the governor, it would seem to me that we're still vulnerable under the provision that was cited by the OLA. And so with that, I would just appreciate a response from Mr. Phillips in terms of if you treated yourself as a bank, do you believe that the stress tests that are relegated to a bank for loans and grants that they would offer up to their constituents and their clients, do you think that the same could be said of the IRRR?
Mr. Chairman, I hope there was a lot of points in there that I'd like to respond to. So
feel free to take them all.
Let me know, Representative. The as I mentioned before, we're probably going to take more risk than the bank, but as far as reviewing business plans and checking people's credit and filing liens and everything that we do, we're very similar. In fact, I received my credit training from Norwest Bank before it was acquired by Wells Fargo. So if you're, I don't know. So we use very similar techniques. The other thing that I just want to point out, there's some underlying thing that there's some money missing somewhere. IRRRB is subject to financial audits. This was a program evaluation. So they look at your program and say, are you evaluating, self-evaluating your programs? Do you clearly stating your objectives? Are you taking your measurements and meter readings? Because our loan structures were wide, very wide, they picked 15 loans, some were bank participation loans, some were bank loans, some were forgivable loans. They tried to apply a test to all of these, and they said, well, they came up short. It's like, have you seen the movie The Big Short, where they package up mortgages and they all have to look exactly alike and then they sell them off as a... We couldn't do that. Every one of our loans are different. And they looked at them like, we want them to all look alike. So we said, we'll embrace that. We're going to work with Deed, and maybe we can use... Maybe, I say maybe because I'm not sure there'll be any kind of legal challenge to us going into employment insurance records and pulling this information. But we're going to try to find a uniform way to measure all our loans as far as job creation. Now, having said that, we are audit financially, agency is financially audited regularly. And it has never had even a blemish on a financial audit. So this is not a question of any money going anywhere like that, okay? And secondly, I would say that the... I think our loan track record, if you look at the thousands of jobs that companies, the IRRRB doesn't create any jobs, companies do, but the companies that we've helped, Delta Airlines, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Delta Dental, manufacturers, that we have one of the largest fishing tackle manufacturers in the country up in Keewatin, Minnesota, so we have helped a lot of companies. I got a call yesterday when they saw this hearing was coming up from one of the founders of Bluefin Bay. There would be no Bluefin Bay if it wasn't for the IRRRB. And they wanted to come here and testify today that what are they doing? Why are they attacking an agency that's done such good work? So I'm here. You know, I have the lists of companies. I'd be happy to supply any information. We're financially audited. The legislative program evaluation, the reason I say we embrace it because we want to get better. We need to invest. You know, this is not going to be cheap. We're investing in grants management software that would help us get better. We're going to invest, and we're just beginning the due diligence on investing in loan monitoring software. What we're using is 1987. It's not perfect. That's what they meant, I think. It's archaic. Doesn't work very well. We're going to invest in new software. But this isn't about making bad loans or bad grants, and this isn't about... we're in compliance 100% from the beginning of the state business subsidy law, 100% in compliance. I think they would agree with that if you want to get them back up here. So this isn't a matter of a bad economic development agency. This is an economic development agency that hadn't been looked at since 1985. You think you're not going to find something? Well, sure you are. We haven't had an internal look like this for 30 years. So they came in, 6 recommendations, we're embracing them.
Thank you. Final member question will be Representative Joaquin. Members, just so everyone knows, we're going to vote and adjourn the committee by 12:05 today, which will be 20 minutes. I want to briefly open it up to public testimony as well. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you. I'll be brief, Mr. Chair. One quick question, just so I kind of understand. It's kind of a newer introduction to the IRRRB. Are all the programs, except for the 3 and the DE-1 amendment, subject to the governor's approval?
Yes.
Okay.
Commissioner Phillips.
Can we get that on record?
Mr. Chairman, yes. For governor's approval, yes.
Subject to governor's approval, so it matches up with the constitutionality test. And I have to apologize. This is kind of a late question because I was trying to find Jensen B. Carlson versus Johnson B. Carlson. And when I read what the OLA based their constitutionality question, which from what I understand, this is basically what this bill is trying to address. It doesn't talk about any of the other stuff we were just talking about. It talks about creating a new structure to a board to address a question that has to do with these 3 entities, these 3 programs within the IRRRB. All the rest meets the constitutional standard. So when I read a little section of Johnson v. Carlson, it does say that the taconite tax is unique, that it is in effect a local tax intended for local purposes, and indeed that it is a constitutionally established in lieu in statute 298.25 and in Minnesota Constitution Article 10 Section 6 of other forms of taxation, real or personal property, to be used within the taconite relief area. So there's no question that all the other programs fall under this. It's just those three that don't. And the reason why Johnson v. Carlson was overturned at the upper court from the lower court was not because of how the structure of the tax was set. It was on how the tax was being imposed by the state that allowed that line item veto. And it only had to do with those three programs, from what I understand. So while I hear a good faith, very good faith, of the new commissioner trying to adapt to the OLA report that just came out, and like everybody says, you go back that many years without an oversight, I question why there wasn't more oversight over all those years, too. It's good that they did look at it, and it sounds like you're trying to meet those six qualifications. And I'm a little concerned that a bill's coming forward not to address the bulk of the OLA report, and that look back and giving them time to do that, but just to that one little section that's in an appendices, when the DE1 amendment could clearly solve that issue right now. I don't know if we have to go through creating a whole other board and commission and restructuring and going through all this process with all the committees, going back through Chapter 13, going through all the other things, when a simple DE1 amendment could fix the one constitutionality issue that the OLA brought up in an appendices, not in their six recommendations. So just a thought.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here today and for your testimony. We will. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? You can come on down, sir. Unfortunately, we're only going to have about 2 or 3 minutes for your testimony. Chair Hackbarth, you can come back to the table as well.
Mr. Chair, could I add one thing in closing?
Very briefly.
Thank you. I think it's important to note, I appreciate that the legislature wants to help improve this process, but we weren't contacted at all for input in this, and I think it's prudent to have on the record that we know a significant amount about the agency sitting on the board and sitting on the jobs committee. I've learned a lot about how it works. And to my knowledge, not one member in the community was reached out to, whether it be a local mayor, county commissioner, to help give input into what I would perceive as a very large change and different way of doing business. And so I hope the legislature will, look at that very carefully, because a lot of communities are getting very nervous about what this change would mean. And we really need stability right now in a time of our economic hardship.
Well, thank you, Representative Metz. I know this is definitely a place where collaboration can happen. Have you or your colleagues introduced a bill yet to address some of these changes or the governance changes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a bill that we're reviewing right now that our Senate colleagues had started. It's jacketed. We expect to look at it actually later this afternoon and tomorrow.
So. Excellent. Thank you, Representative Metza. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you would state your name and proceed with brief testimony.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ron Dicklich, and I'm a legislative consultant for the Range Association of Municipalities and School Boards, which I will referred to from here on in as RAMS. Also, I was the executive director of that organization for 13 years, which is a group that was put together of 25 cities, 15 school districts, and 12 townships in what's known as the Taconite Relief Area or the Taconite Assistance Area. And although our board is meeting next week and don't have an official position on this bill, I will tell you from past years, our position has always been that the taconite tax, which is in lieu of property tax, as was eloquently stated by our legislators, is actually belongs to the people who live in the cities, school districts, and townships of the taconite relief area. And our position has been and always will be that that money should be overseen and spent by people who are actually elected by the people that represent those cities, school districts, and townships. Since the beginning of time, which was 1965, the Taconite Amendment was passed, which was a very hard fought and a lot of money spent. That money, it's been known, is the property taxes that formerly was ad valorem that was collected to run our city school districts and townships. And that's and to this day, that's what we believe in. Our future has always been in question. We have an industry, natural resource industry, that based industry that's up and down. Even today, the hardships that are there are also made more complicated by the fact that the steel industry, in order to compete worldwide, has to change the technology of how they make steel, and a lot of the raw material that we have is not conducive for that technology. So we have to figure out a way to make that so that it works. I'll keep this brief. At the end of the day, when you look at this, there is no other area of the state that has their property taxes spent by people that are not elected from that area. And that's exactly what you'd be doing with a bill like that, because I don't see anywhere in the bill, except for some citizen members that would have to be from the area, but not elected. And I'm a former legislator, I'm a former county commissioner, former mayor, former school board member, and I believe that the way it's set up now, where our legislators are put in the charge and tasked with the agency to do what's best for economic development regionally rather than in a microscopic way, is the best way. I've been doing this for 40 some years, and that agency has always done things in the best interest of the area. Are there some blips? Yes, there always is. You know, and I always look at the stories that spin out after this, like the Giants Ridge subsidy. Well, the Giants Ridge subsidy per user is about $20 to $30 a person. I just looked up what the Viking Stadium, the 10 home games that are going to be held there. If you fill it for every game, for the 10 games, that which includes the two preseason games, the subsidy is going to be $717 per person that goes to those games. So if you're worried about subsidies of something that was funded with public dollars, you need to look at things like that.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. With that, members, I will move into member question discussion. There are a couple amendments in the packet. Does anyone want to claim those? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to offer the DE1 amendment.
Representative Nelson moves the DE1.
And I'd like a roll call on that, Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been requested.
And members, what this amendment does, as we've been talking here, the part that's the discussion is about constitutionality of the current makeup of the IRRRB and the funds up there, that this would move those three accounts into government approval by the governor, so that they would and then in effect turn the board into advisory board and would get by the constitutional questions that are raised. And that's what the amendment does, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Hackbarth.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members and Representative Nelson, this does take care of the constitutionality issue, but where's the oversight? I mean, this report was all about accountability and oversight. And I've heard some talk today that this bill is only directed towards the constitutional issue. That is not true. It does direct some differences to address the constitutional issue, but it also gives oversight and accountability to what's happening. Now, I have to bring something into perspective, Mr. Chairman. We've talked a lot about property taxes here today and what's happening with this money, and Mr. Dicklich even referred to what's happening to some of the property tax money and the local units of government. We are not touching. This bill does not address any of the money that goes to the counties, to the cities, to the schools, to the township at all. That stays in place. We do not address that issue at all. All of that production tax money is still going to happen, and we're not redirecting it. We're not addressing that issue at all, how that money is spent or where it goes or any of that. This is all about the discretionary spending at the IRRRB. Just as an example, I know, Mr. Chairman, you don't want to get into dollars, but we have to bring it into perspective. In 2015, it was $111 million. Representative Anzell, that is not peanuts.
You said it was peanuts. It's not peanuts. This is a lot of money. And where is it going? Most of that money does go to the schools and the local units of government. But $38 million in 2015, well, $37 million, almost $38 million, is the discretionary spending that the IRRRB and this board spends. I think this bill gets to the point of addressing not only the constitutional amendment issue, or the constitutional issue, but also where is that money going and how is it being spent? And I think everyone on the Iron Range should be concerned about that. If you read the legislative auditor's report, it's about accountability and finding out. The IRRRB itself sets forth criteria on how you have to apply for these grants and these loans. And the issue is, if you read this, there's no follow-up. They're not looking at whether these jobs are actually being created. There's nothing to tell us how many jobs are we creating. Oh, up front, we're going to create 100 jobs, and this is what's all going to happen. But there's no follow-up. That's the issue. It's not about the money and money disappearing and things like that. Of course, a lot of these companies that are funded with this IRRRB money go broke. And where did the money go? We don't know that, but I guess we can kind of figure that out. But there's no follow-up on the jobs. So everybody on the Iron Range, every citizen on the Iron Range should be concerned about this, not having any oversight about what's going on with the money, where are the jobs that were supposed to be created, and why aren't they still here? So your amendment, Representative Nelson, only gives oversight to the governor. The governor is the only one that's overseeing this. And the recommendations are going to be given to the governor, and he's going to say, well, yeah, I agree or I don't agree with these. We need to have more of that. The LCCMR, LASARD, SAMS, different groups like that oversee those kinds of things. We have a minimal amount of employees at the LCCMR and LASARD, SAMS. They're doing follow-up. They're making sure that these grants are followed up on and that they're meeting these issues. There's 73 employees at the IRRRB. They should be able to find out exactly what's happening with the money, and they should be doing follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Hackbarth.
I agree with you,
members, I would also urge a no vote. I think that this amendment is insufficient in getting to the underlying issue of constitutionality, which in our legislative evaluation report summary is under the key facts and key findings here. Still think we have an issue with the small board of legislators deciding what goes to the governor under this DE1. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to point out, as a legislature, the IRRRB is a state-level cabinet. It's an agency, and we have oversight over agencies. And I would also like to ask for a roll call on this amendment.
It has been roll called. Oh. Representative Nelson, final word on your amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the...
Oh, he did.
I know we're running short of time here, so like I said... As we look at this, we're talking about oversight, about that's what's bringing the bill forward, and we're changing the way property tax dollars are being spent for a large portion of the state of Minnesota, and I'm curious what local officials from that area that Representative Hackbart talked to got input from, because if we're going to make changes to that, we should be getting that input from those people of how they want their money spent, because this is their property tax dollars. But with that, Mr. Chair, I'll...
Thank you, Representative Nelson. The roll will be taken.
Chair Sanders.
No.
Representative Pugh.
No.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Albright.
No.
Representative Fenton.
No.
Representative Halverson.
Yes.
Representative Lane.
Yes.
Representative Mullery.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
Nope.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Runbeck.
No.
Representative Seltzer. Representative Tice.
No.
Representative Joachim.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
No.
There being 5 ayes and 10 nays, the 10 nays prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got the A3 amendment here also, and that I'd like to offer.
Representative Nelson moves the A3.
And Mr. Chair, this again, we're going back to oversight and transparency and clarity of spending. If Representative Hackbarth believes that for the portion of the state that encompasses the Iron Range, that it's important that we as the Government Operations Committee, that we have the should have oversight and transparency and clarity in the way they spend their money, I think that it's only fair that the cities listed here, some of which are represented by Representative Hackbarth, that they should also have that same oversight so that we can have transparency and clarity with us how they're spending their tax dollars. Because, again, we're talking about property tax dollars is what the production tax is in lieu of property tax dollars, commercial industrial property tax dollars on those agents, on those businesses that are in the Iron Range. And so we should have that same for these cities here also. And that's what my amendment does, Mr. Chair.
Members, I would urge a no vote on this A3 amendment. Representative Nelson, does the IRRB, do they have an elected mayor or an elected county commissioner?
Mr. Chair, the IRRB, no, they have elected officials sitting on there that do that oversight.
Representative Nelson, is the IRRB, are they a city or a county or are they a state agency?
Mr. Chair, the way they're set up is a state agency that oversees that.
Representative Nelson, is there any state agency that doesn't have to come before the legislature for approval for their budget?
I don't know the answer to that question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, does the governor appoint the mayor of Andover?
Representative Nelson.
No.
Does the governor
Representative
appoint
Scott.
Representative Nelson, does the governor appoint the mayor of Ham Lake?
Representative Nelson.
No.
How about
Representative Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the governor appoint the mayor of Hastings, Farmington, or Blaine?
Representative Nelson.
No, but Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Like all subdivisions in the state of Minnesota, they are basically the powers that they have and the way that they are set up are based on what the legislature does. It's a power that we as the state of Minnesota have ceded to those areas, and it's not, and they have the powers that we give them, similar to the IRRB. And so, Mr. Chair, at this point, I'd like to withdraw the amendment.
Representative Scott.
That's all, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair Hackbarth.
Roll call on the bill.
Roll call is requested on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is not meant to be adversarial at all, and I believe that the citizens on the Iron Range deserve better. They should know where this money is going and the amount of jobs that the IRRB is creating, and they need additional oversight, and I think this bill brings us to that point.
Thank you, Chair Hackbarth. With that, the roll will be taken.
Chair Sanders.
No. Yes.
Representative Pugh.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Albright.
Yes.
Representative Fenton.
Yes.
Representative Halverson.
No.
Representative Lane.
No.
Representative Mullery.
No.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
Yes.
Representative Runbeck.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative Joachim.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
There being 10 ayes and 5 nays, the ayes prevail. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. With that, members, we are adjourned. We'll see you in session.